First, we're going to take up the election of directors and the management proposals in the order in which they appear in the proxy statement. After all the management proposals and the directors have been introduced, there'll be an opportunity for questions and discussion. The independent inspectors of election for this year's meeting are representatives of IBS Associates. The inspectors have taken the oath of office required by law and have been at work since the proxy started coming in. If you've already voted by proxy, there's no need to vote by ballot today unless you would like to change your vote. Now you'll find a ballot on your seat. Let's turn to the election of directors and the four management proposals in the proxy. I place before the meeting to serve as directors for the coming year the 16 individuals whose names and biographies appear on page 3 through 8 of the proxy statement, namely directors Beattie, Cash, Fudge, Hockfield, ML, Jung, Lafley, Lane, Larson, Lazarus, Mulvin, Nunn, Pinsky, Swearingen, Tisch, and Warner. Each of these nominees has received the overwhelming majority of more than 8 billion shares voted by proxy. The first management proposal is to ratify the selection of KPMG as independent auditors for 2012, which I place before the meeting. Your board of directors recommends the ratification of KPMG as independent auditors for 2012. The second management proposal is an advisory resolution on executive compensation. Your board of directors recommends a vote for the advisory resolution to approve executive compensation. The third management proposal is an approval of an amendment to the G2007 long-term incentive plan. Your board of directors recommends a vote for the amendment to the 2007 long-term incentive plan. The fourth management proposal is an approval of material terms of senior officer performance goals. Your board of directors recommends a vote for the approval of material terms and senior officer performance goals. Now you have a chance to ask questions or discuss the board nominees and management proposals. If you'd like to speak, just go to one of the two aisle microphones. I'll call on you there. Please give your name and you'll be recognized. Dr. Borelli, let's start with you.
Good morning, Jeff and team. And first of all, I'd like to thank General Electric Security as well as the Detroit Police Department this morning. It was a spectacular performance, and they really did a great job. Speaking of the protests, I think I really urge the board of directors to really pay attention and not to dismiss the concerns of both the political right and left, because GE is now a target of both. And if you really sit back and think about it and urge the board of directors to really think about this, General Electric over the years has really violated the public trust. General Electric got a $16 billion loan from the Federal Reserve and then lobbied and got for over $125 million in grants and contracts from President Obama's stimulus plan. You see, that kind of violates the public trust, where our taxpayer dollars are going to subsidize a company of which Mr. Sheridan just said how much money you're making. That's a violation of the public trust. And another concern that we have, Mr. Immelt, is with your position on President Obama's Jobs Advisory Board. We're concerned about a conflict of interest. You know, whose master are you really serving? At last year's meeting, you mentioned that you use your good judgment to try to avoid conflicts of interest. Well, you know, that's a good statement. But what we really are really concerned about is this conflict of interest. We've noted that when President Obama meets with the board, it's videotaped and everything is available for public scrutiny. However, the private meetings aren't. Now, what I'm asking you today as chairman of the advisory board to commit to make all the submissions of the individual job panel members publicly available, as well as videotape those proceedings when you're discussing with the jobs panel. That's transparency. That's for both political left and right. And this way, people can see really what's going on. So will you make sure in your next panel before your meeting to videotape those and to make all the records public?
You know, Dr. Borelli, we're currently in implementation phase of the recommendation of the Jobs Council. I'll leave any of the conduct of the meeting really up to the White House, but I'd say for right now, we're just trying to implement the proposals that have been recommended.
Well, then would you make General Electric submissions public?
Again, I would leave that to the White House.
I'm talking about General Electric submission.
I understand, Dr. Riley. I understand your point. Again, as I say every year, I respect your views.
No, I respect you too. I mean, you're chairman of a large corporation. But again, why won't you make your submission publicly available?
Again, all the work of the Jobs Council is in the public domain.
So I can find what team?
All the work of the Jobs Council.
So there's a memo with your name on it saying this is our idea.
All the work's in the public domain.
Then will you send that to us?
Thank you. All the work's in the public domain.
That's kind of a confusing answer.
Okay, Dr. Thank you. Bill?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bill Frieda, and before we cast our votes this morning for our board of directors, which includes members of the Management Development and Compensation Committee, there is an issue I want to bring to the attention of my fellow share owners. I am here this morning to urge you and our board of directors to put an end to the practice that is commonly known as phantom dividends. The issue before us is whether senior executives of GE should be permitted to collect dividends or dividend equivalents on shares of equity compensation they do not own. When I received this year's proxy statement and found no share owner proposal covering this issue, I was disappointed. But then it occurred to me, why in the world should there be a need for such a share owner proposal? This practice, to me, is so obviously wrong and unfair that it would seem to render the need for a formal proposal to eliminate it unnecessary. I have always been told that GE was a meritocracy, which means you are rewarded for the things you do. The payment of phantom dividends is a contradiction of that theory. What makes phantom dividends even more egregious is that they continue to be paid when at the very same time our dividends have been reduced. On some level, Mr. Chairman, you must agree with me, because beginning in September 2006, you declared that you would only accumulate dividends if you actually own the shares. And for that, Jeff, I applaud your leadership. Now is the time for other GE executives to step up and follow your example. From 1986 to 2000, I worked as an NBC GE employee. During those 14 years, I was required to attend several integrity policy meetings. This integrity policy, I was told, was the cornerstone of the way GE conducts its business. That is why I am dismayed and disappointed that GE would allow its employees, whatever their position, to collect compensation they are not entitled to. Mr. Chairman, if this practice is allowed to continue, it would be disrespectful to your share owners and retirees who have had to endure a reduction in their income due to the lowering of the dividend, to your current employees who are now required to pay significantly more for their medical benefits, and to your future employees who are now precluded from joining the GE pension plan. All these steps were taken, presumably, because they were prudent business decisions. Mr. Jammin, I am perplexed to understand how anybody can consider phantom dividends a prudent business decision. In the past, GE has defended this practice by explaining that it was necessary in order to attract and retain the most qualified people. Jeff, if prospective GE employees need to be rewarded in this manner, perhaps our company would be better off without them. In addition, phantom dividends has been described as being necessary to compete with other major corporations. In this year's letter to the share owners, you seem to complain that American companies are being unfairly vilified. Mr. Chairman, practices like phantom dividends only give credibility to the critics of big American companies.
Thank you, Bill.
One more sentence, sir. Finally, in this year's letter to the share owners, you describe GE as a we company, not a me company. What better way to illustrate that theory by eliminating phantom dividends?
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Borelli?
Hi. Good morning. Janine Borelli from Project 21 and also author of Blacklash. I've written extensively about energy in my new book, and also General Electric's crony capitalism is featured in my book. Mr. Immel, GE lobbied for a de facto ban on the incandescent light bulb, and over 67% of Americans want the ban repealed. So my question to you, Mr. Immel, is will you promise not to oppose the repeal of this ban on incandescent light bulbs?
You know, Ms. Borelli, to be perfectly honest, we really never lobbied for the repeal of the incandescent light bulb. If people want to buy incandescent light bulbs, we will sell them incandescent light bulbs.
But with the government mandating that the light bulbs be banned, something that the company would not benefit
at all. Either way, we will sell incandescent bulbs, we will sell other bulbs, but you know, we would just like certainty.
But as the government has mandating for incandescent bulbs to be eliminated, we have a lot of people who are on fixed income. The other light bulbs are
traditional
light bulbs are much more expensive.
We'll sell whatever people want.
You're saying that the company will provide whatever light bulbs are available?
We will lobby for. We would like certainty. That's all we've ever asked for, and we'll sell whatever people want.
So you're in favor of the traditional light
bulb? Look, I really, this
I
is
just want to make sure I understand.
This is a 130-year-old industry. I really would sell whatever people want. We really haven't lobbied either way.
So you're for free market, and you agree with the traditional light bulb?
Let's sell what people want.
Okay, just want to make sure.
Thanks. We'll move on to the shareowner proposals in the order in which they appear in the agenda. To be sure that all the proponents have an opportunity to present their proposals today, we ask that the presenters confine their comments to, during the portion of the meeting to the subject matter of the proposal being presented. We ask that other speakers wait until all shareowner proposals are presented before providing their comments. We will have an opportunity for discussion of other matters after we finish balloting and report of the Inspector of Election on results. So we have four shareowner proposals today. And we're going to do them in order. The first one comes is a proposal on cumulative voting by Evelyn Davis. Number two is a proposal related to nuclear activities submitted by Kevin Camps and Michael Keegan. Number three is a proposal for an independent board chairman submitted by Bill Steiner. Number four is a proposal related to share no action by written consent submitted by Ken Steiner. Ms. Davis is not here today, so let's begin with number two and Mr. Camps. Mr. Keegan.
Thank you, Chairman Immelt. My name is Kevin Camps. I'm born and raised in Kalamazoo, Michigan. I serve as radioactive waste specialist at Beyond Nuclear and also on the board of directors of Don't Waste Michigan, the statewide anti-nuclear watchdog. I had the privilege of traveling to Fukushima Daiichi in 2010, 7 months before the nuclear catastrophe at the GE reactors there. And I was accompanied by a group of local citizens and concerned officials who traveled to the host villages of Fukushima Daiichi, Futaba and Okuma, and met with the mayors there, also the prefectural nuclear regulators. And these people, like the Iwaki City Council member, Mr. Sato, and Saiko Uno, who was a young woman in her 20s, just engaged, felt so important, these meetings were so important, that she put on a very beautiful traditional kimono to deliver petitions to the mayors of these two host towns of Fukushima Daiichi. And Mrs. Kaiko also went. She's from Fukushima City, about 50 miles away. The young woman is now a nuclear refugee, one of about 100,000 from Fukushima Prefecture. Mrs. Kaiko in Fukushima City wants to evacuate but cannot afford to. And Mr. Sato, bless his heart, stood by his post in Iwaki until all of his people were safe. I also met a political cartoonist who has long warned about the dangers at Fukushima Daiichi, and he was very prescient in his poster for our meeting in Okuma, where he showed the explosion, he showed the mushroom cloud, he showed the plume of radioactivity escaping. And I have his other work here as well, if people would like to see it. And I also have a menu from a local organic cafe down the road from Fukushima Daiichi. This is all a dead zone now, out to a distance of 12.4 miles. It should be much larger. President Obama himself warned Americans in the first days to get 50 miles away. And so it's my honor to read to you this resolution prepared by the GE Stockholders Alliance, a resolution urging General Electric to withdraw from nuclear energy. Whereas on December 1st, 2009, GE issued a policy statement affirming its support of nuclear energy, even though no safe disposal location or technology exists, and may never exist for the permanent isolation of the dangerous radioactive waste that continues to accumulate at all reactor sites. Whereas every nuclear power reactor generates plutonium that is in demand worldwide for weapons production. On March 11, 2011, a nuclear catastrophe began at Fukushima Daiichi, a site that contained six GE reactors. Motivated by the ongoing Japanese disaster, Germany, Italy, and Switzerland have announced they will abandon nuclear power, with other countries considering the same commitment. On September 18, 2011, German engineering giant Siemens announced it will halt its manufacturing of nuclear products and will focus on solar, wind, and geothermal technologies. Many U.S. reactors are in locations threatened by extreme natural assaults, hurricanes, floods, earthquakes, tornadoes, with the GE Mark I reactors, 23 of them, at especially high risk, due to major flaws identified at least as early as 1971. Therefore, be it resolved that as GE stockholders, we urge our company to reverse its nuclear energy policy and as soon as possible phase out all its nuclear activities, including proposed fuel reprocessing and uranium enrichment. In support, contrary to nuclear industry claims, the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission has not been rigorously regulating nuclear power operations, but instead often reduces safety requirements when needed changes would be impossible or too expensive. Because of the dangerously crowded condition of the irradiated fuel pools at all GE reactors, it is now recommended that fuel rods at least 5 years old should be transferred from the fuel pool to hardened dry storage casks outside the reactor building. And I would like everyone to know that we have additional supporting materials on the table outside, including a Freezar Fukushima's campaign brochure. The Fermi 2 reactor, that is 35 miles from where we are right now, is the largest GE Mark I in the world, almost as big as Fukushima Daiichi units 1 and 2 put together. And there's over 500 tons of high-level radioactive waste in the Fermi 2 pool, more than units 1, 2, 3, and 4 at Fukushima Daiichi combined. And if the Unit 4 pool at Unit 4 Fukushima Daiichi collapses in an earthquake, the radioactivity release could be more catastrophic than what's already occurred in the past 13 months.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Proposal number 3, I think, is going to be introduced by Mr. Love? On independent board chair. Yes, sir.
Hello, I'm Michael Keegan. I was told we made arrangements we would each have 5 minutes.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning. GE, Age of Imagination, a few years back you gave up your logo of GE, we bring good things to life. And I'm troubled about bringing good things to life. Yesterday, the Economist of the UK describes the post-crisis of Japan as lingering agony for the people of Japan. We're here today as an opportunity for prevention. We don't have to go there again. It was known that these GE reactors were faulty. In 1976, three GE engineers came forward in testimony to Congress. You are in a cauldron of culpability, liability. You now know that this reactor design will fail. We have the largest of this unit designed in Monroe, Michigan, and the situation is that Detroit is in jeopardy. You are approaching culpability when a known situation, a known danger is not addressed. We are asking that you shut these GE Mark I reactors down. 5 out of 6 of those ESBWR, the new model of the GE reactors, have been canceled. We would ask that you cancel the Fermi 3, the proposed Fermi 3. There is growing opposition. There are 2,500 people on the street as we speak in solidarity and in opposition to this reactor design. The problem at the spent fuel pool at the Fermi is abysmal. It's a bad design. It was designed to hold 2,300 units assemblies. It's now holding close to 4,600, twice what it was designed for. As my colleague mentioned, at 4 hours and 12 minutes into a loss of coolant, the water would begin to boil off. The fuel would begin to spontaneously combust when the water is gone. Appalling, I found that the utility, Detroit Edison Company, moved for an exemption to have to do inspection and inventory of the spent fuel pool in 2007. So apparently they want to stick their head in the sand and not know what's going on. The transfer of the fuel out of the spent fuel pool has been hampered because the reactor was not built as designed. The welds were never done on it from the blueprints of 1970. 40 years later, they have to go back and do remedial welds on the fifth floor and on the fourth floor, first floor, 768 welds. The quality assurance at the Fermi 2 is abysmal, and that is how it is throughout the land with these GE Mark I reactors, Vermont Yankee, elsewhere. You really are opening this company up to a major liability. So we are here today to provide a service to the company and shareholders and ask you to change course in that direction. It does not take an earthquake or a tsunami to bring about station blackout. In fact, in May of 1988, the Fermi 2 reactor had a station blackout because a raccoon shorted out buses. In June of 2010, a tornado took the plant into a station blackout. So these types of things do occur. You don't need an earthquake and a tsunami to put a plant into a station blackout. The quality assurance at the Fermi 3, virtually the application lacked any quality assurance. This was found by the NRC. We are in a court of law, ASLB proceedings. We are challenging this. We will challenge the ESBWR.
Thank you.
And I would just like kudos to this utility. The major opportunity cost here. You could spend $15 billion pursuing a Fermi 3, or you could take that money and put it into windmills, and we appreciate where GE is going with the windmills. They've just announced 650 megawatts in Ontario.
Thank you, Mr.
Most appreciative of that.
Thank you.
So I urge the shareholders, if they have already voted, to change your proxy and a vote for the proposal that opposes nuclear power.
Thank you, Mr. King.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Lev, I think you're going to speak next on independent board chair. Apologize if I mispronounce your name.
That's fine. Thank you. Well, the generals are in town, so it was exciting to find out that you were going to be here in Detroit. The electrics and General Electric and General Motors. And we also shared a director, Lafley, who was currently on both boards at one time. So there's a great commonality. I'm also a nominee for the board of directors of GM myself. Detroit is ground zero for the problems that are facing our country. And the problem is this misdirection that's taking place in the way we're going. For example, here in Detroit, Penske wants to put a trolley down the streets while the Detroit kids have the worst school system in the United States. So our priorities are just out of whack. And basically, there's three icebergs that we've hit as a country. The banks have, because 2000, they canceled the Glass-Steagall Act and allowed them to do their mischief. China, we allow them to not pay Social Security, take our jobs, pollute the planet, and cheat. And nobody is doing anything about this in Washington. That's iceberg number two. And China only has 9% of the debt, and that's a fact that isn't very well publicized. Everybody thinks they own the country, which they don't. The Social Security Trust Fund owns more than they do, and Japan together. So if you can talk to NBC about publicizing some of that, that would be helpful.
They don't listen to me anymore. not that they ever did, sir.
Well, they don't listen to me either, so we're even. The third iceberg that we've hit is Mexico. We ship jobs down there. They took the Electrolux plant out of here. And you go down there, it's the same problem as corruption, pollution, and no Social Security. With this 10 million manufacturing job hole in our economy, there's only one problem. The Titanic has hit the iceberg, and that's where we're at. And we've got to fill these holes in our economy. That's the problem. Otherwise, it's the same kind of thing that led to the Titanic disaster. And that's what we're facing. It's
Thank
a
you.
Titanic problem. Moving on. The opportunities are great. And the one thing that is encouraging that you have two new people on the board, Tish, who was with the Federal Reserve, so he would certainly have a inside view on what took place. And Beattie, he was from Canada, the Canadian banks, and they did a better job than we did down here. So maybe he could soup this up, because this $35 billion loss in that financial hole is a great burden that still remains on the economy. And Warner was at Chase when they canceled Siegel, and Swearinga was on the accounting people, and they had Rule 140 that is one of the problems. And Lazarus at Columbia Business School, so they could help. In China, cash is buying everything at Walmart. And I went down there, couldn't even buy a can opener that was made in the United States. And I have one, though, from another store. None. He was with the Senate, and he knows what the threat is with China and that situation. So we've got to get on top of this. As far as enumerating on this proposal, the idea is not to replace you, but to have another partner so that you can do the important things and he can do the work.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
But there's so much in this task that it's beyond one person, and if it's shared in that way, that people would feel that they could talk to twice as many people to get the message. That's the the idea here. The corporate library evaluating our board gave them a D because of high government risk. And they flagged Penske because he was on the Delphi board that went bankrupt. I realized Delphi was a big problem, and General Motors was responsible for much of that. But it was shifting things overseas as some of the counters that, anyway, took place in that issue. So, in summary, the Titanic, as a country, we've hit this iceberg. And this China, it isn't the 10 million jobs that have been lost. It's the 10 million families that can't buy cars, can't buy pizzas, and the families that depend on those. And nothing has been done. They allow them to cheat on the currency, and it just keeps going. And the same thing in Mexico. We bring the people up here, and they say, well, it's okay to bring them all up here, but that bankrupts our schools.
Thank you very much.
But thank you, and
thank you, sir.
Best luck. And I like nuclear plants, too.
Finally, the final sharing of proposal is from Mr. Mark. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning.
This is on written consent.
Good morning, Jeff, and the board of directors and fellow share owners of GE. Hope you had a good dinner last night at the Henry Ford Museum. Ironically, we had a busload of GE retirees who were coming out as they were setting up for your dinner there. So I went over to some security people, and I said, well, maybe we're all GE former retirees and employees. Is there room enough for us? You should have seen the look I got. If looks could have killed, I wouldn't be standing here today.
Believe me, he had your picture, Kevin. good looking that it is.
My name is Kevin Maher, and I'm a retiree of GE from Lynn, Mass. I have 33 years of service in Lynn. Jeff, just as you introduced the board of directors for recognition, so too would I ask the retirees who made this company and devoted nearly all their working lives to make this company what it is today to stand and be recognized. Let's give the retirees, please stand up and have a round of applause, because you are the people. You are the people that has made this company. Thank you. We have been coming to every GE share owners meeting for 16 years, and sometimes elderly and frail GE retirees have endured bus rides of 12 hours to get here to have their voices heard. Of course, Helen Quirini and Bob Davis and others are here with us in spirit, along with GE retirees from Schenectady and Lynn, where GE was founded on April 15, 1892, between those two cities, and from Louisville, Erie, Pittsfield, Cincinnati, New York City, and Philadelphia. First of all, Jeff, I want to publicly thank you and your team for the historic meeting which took place with you and all the retirees representing those locations on October 18, 2011 at company headquarters in Fairfield. Actually, if you'll go to the proponent's desk, we're handing out pictures of Jeff. Maybe he wants to use it for target practice on my picture as a dartboard. I don't know. But I truly believe that this kind of ongoing discussion had led to many changes in the company and how retirees' problems have been solved. After the share owners meeting, I will be in touch with suggestions for future meetings. The annual report states there are 225,000 GE retirees and beneficiaries who are currently receiving pension benefits from our principal pension plan. Since 1996, when we first started attending the annual meeting, hundreds of thousands of GE retirees received three pension increases and two 13th checks. As I told you directly at that Fairfield meeting, Jeff, any increases in pension should be geared so those out on pension the longest who received the least amount of pension should receive the biggest percentage increase. The three pension increases have been structured that way. Don't you think it is patently unfair when a Jim Holman from Lynn, Mass., with 30 years service at the highest rated job in the plant, an IR-23, receives a 13th check of $672, and this check does not include a deduction for health insurance of over $209. At the same time, somebody receives a $5,000 or higher for their 13th check. Jeff, I truly feel most reasonable people would believe that is the wrong kind of structure. It does not address the erosion of purchasing power of a long-time retiree. After all, if Jim Holman is hit with tax increases and higher costs and higher living costs, if we had an independent chairman or share owners action by written consent, maybe we could take a look at these kinds of problems in a different light. And it would be nice to have a non-management retiree representative on the pension board. That would make a difference. As a result of our meetings with you and your staff, there have been several structural changes. For example, it used to be that the all board GE board of directors were eligible for a 75,000 pension after 5 years on the board. That is no longer true for new directors. And increases in our pension trust were also used as a basis for higher executive bonuses. That also is no longer true. Many other changes, too numerous to say, that retirees have made a big difference in the operation of our GE family and how GE retirees are treated. Jeff, you have consistently stated you want complete transparency. Well, we want it also. We look forward to another high-level meeting, and note it, we are still owed answers to our questions from that October 18th meeting. And by the way, I suggest the next annual meeting in 2013 be held in Louisville, Kentucky, or Lynn, Massachusetts. Would welcome you there, believe me. And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.
Great. So we're going to move on to agenda item number four, balloting. Remember, we'll provide an opportunity for discussion on other business matters in a few minutes, but balloting on the items and the proxy statement comes first. You'll find a ballot on your seat. If you have a ballot ready to turn in, please hold it up, and I'll ask the ushers to collect it. Ballots collected at this meeting will be reflected in the final vote results tomorrow. I believe the inspectors of election are ready to announce the outcome of the voting. Remember, 8 billion shares have already been voted. So let's go to the inspector's report. Mr. Barbera of IVS Associates will be presenting the report of the inspectors. Mr. Barbera, do you have a report for us?
Mr. Chairman, the inspectors of election have completed an initial count of the votes cast at this meeting in person or by proxy. Proxies representing approximately 8,251,000,000 shares, or 78% of the total shares eligible to vote, were received. Other shares have been voted at this meeting by ballot or by proxy. On the basis of our initial count, the inspectors of election announced the following results. On the election of directors, directors each received at least 5.37 billion favorable votes, and all nominees have been elected. On the ratification of selection of independent registered public accounting firm, KPMG, as auditors, 97.5% shares voted for, 2.5% against. On the management proposals, the advisory resolution to approve executive compensation, for 92.5% of shares voted, against 7.5%. On the approval of an amendment to the GE 2007 long-term incentive plan, for 93.1% of shares voted, against 6.9%. The approval of the material terms of senior officer performance goals, for 92.7% of shares voted, against 7.3%. On the share owner proposals, proposal one, cumulative voting, for 26.3% of shares voted, against 73.7%. Number two, the nuclear activities proposal, for 2.4% of shares voted, against 97.6%. Shannon proposal number three, the independent board chairman, for 22% of shares voted, against 78%. Shannon action written by written consent, for 47.5% of shares voted, against 52.5%. Mr. Chairman, this initial tally is subject to verification, and the final tabulation may reflect small changes in the vote I have announced. The final tabulation will be set forth in the formal report of the inspectors of election to the secretary of the company, which will be made after the count has been verified. This concludes our report.
Thank you, Mr. Barbera. And that's the formal business of our annual meeting. We still have time for one or two questions, which is agenda item number six. We've already heard extensive comments on the issues raised this year, and I'd like to know if anybody else would like to ask a question.
My name is Martin Harangozo, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to be a shareholder. I love this company, people, and products. I pay gentlemen on stage $50 each year. 29 of 30 original Dow companies have changed that title in 75 years or less. The 400 richest Americans changed that title by over 80% in 20 years or less. They did not grow 5%. This can teach us to become and remain the greatest company by taking two simple, humble steps. First, eliminate and then operate with no debt. Second, index one quarter of net income liability free from the company. This will make us too smart to fail and challenge us to exceed the global business average benchmark to become and remain the greatest company. In 7 years, I would like to wear a T-shirt saying, GE works for me, debt-free.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Dennis, good morning.
Hi, Jeff. Good morning. Thank you for the forbearance afforded me while I beat the expired equine of corporate governance one more time. Unless I'm fortunate enough to beat your legal team of Gibson, Dunn, and Crutcher and get on the proxy. In my view, our board's performance has contributed to our stock's underperformance, as shown on page 139 of our annual report. For me, and I acknowledge that others disagree strongly with my position, Director Fudge's continuing presence on our board is somewhere between lamentable and risible. So I voted my 17,000 shares against her. Director Jung's position has become increasingly questionable. If she has submitted her resignation as required by the governance rules, why didn't you accept it? And what are your views on term limits for directors?
You know, again, Dennis, I think we have a really fantastic board, and I'm going to leave it at that. You know, 95% of the shareholders agree with me on this point.
I appreciate it on the first question. On the second question, I would appreciate it if you would be kind enough to illuminate me with your respect
again,
to your views on term.
95% of all shareholders agree with me, not you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Yes, ma'am. Microphone number one.
Buenvenidos. Buenos dias, Mr. Chairman, Board of Directors, fellow shareholders. Special thank you for coming to this great but tired city. Thank you to Mr. Penske, who I adore, and all the board of directors who give back to the community. A lot of the agencies, a lot of the people here do not recognize that, but I do. I represent Detroit Metro, SARE, and National, who have actually granted some workforce development grants, and those are very important that the community-based organizations still can rely on people and GE to give back to the community, because we are educating the workforce. And I do agree that with you coming here, just I said, wow. You know, most global companies use an excuse to leave great cities and urban cities. Oh, we become global, so they don't have to pay attention to the urban population. I take my hat off to all of you. We have experience that you do care about the urban cities, that you care about the community-based organizations that serve the citizens of this great nation. And I do believe that in my heart, and that's why I got through security day, to make sure that I became part of the record. Again, I'm Jane Garcia, and I'm from this
great
city of Detroit, Michigan. Muchísimas gracias.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. So We'll take two more questions. We'll go back to the man, mic number one, and then Dennis, we'll let you have the last question. Yes, sir. Mic number one.
My name is Dick Max. I'm from St. Clair Terrace, Michigan, and I will be brief. I support the resolution urging General Electric to withdraw from nuclear energy We do not want the GE Hitachi reactor or other reactors from GE. We already suffered the liability of the GE Mark I reactors that continue to release radionuclides and widespread fallout from Daiichi's destroyed reactors, and the liability of 23 flawed and aged GE Mark I reactors in the U.S. Daily releases from reactors, operator error, equipment failure, accidents, release nuclear radiation that is cumulative and can produce almost the whole spectrum of human illness, morbidity, and genetic mutations. At least 28 reactor accidents are on record. These are not past historical events, but ongoing assaults on human cell tissue and the rest of the biosphere. There is no solution to the ever-increasing radioactive waste produced by reactors. In fact, reactors cannot be made safe, reactor failure cannot be designed out, worker insolvability can't be achieved. Aging degradation of reactors cannot be adequately tracked and proactively repaired. Reactor explosions will happen. That's a fact of life. The biosphere and the human gene pool is degraded, and that will continue to increase. Reactor owners and the NRC cannot be trusted to honor licensing obligations. Stop public financing of all kinds, and reactors will not be built or relicensed. Greed and access to public tax dollars and higher utility rates drive reactors. Finally, continued design and production of reactors is the ultimate moral failure, equaled only by the continued production and maintenance of nuclear weapons.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Dennis, we'll let you have the last question.
I'd like to have a last answer, too. It's well known that I was a critic of the 2008 stock buyback, and I'd like to take another crack at that issue also. Because in my opinion, it's about a $2 billion misstep. Warren Buffett, in his current annual report, says many CEOs never stop believing their stock is cheap. Continuing shareholders are hurt unless shares are purchased below intrinsic value. The first law of capital allocation, whether the money is slated for acquisitions or share repurchases, is what is smart at one price is dumb at another. My question is, do we have similar metrics to those which are in place at Berkshire Hathaway with respect to our current stock buyback program?
So, Dennis, we do. I think what Keith showed today is we believe in a balanced capital allocation approach. We love the dividend, and we plan to keep increasing the dividend in line with earnings. We continue to do strategic acquisitions, and we'll do buybacks, you know, based on criteria and approved by the board. So we appreciate your concern. You've made it consistently. Thanks. So really, that is it for this year's meeting. I want to thank everybody in the room for attendance. I want to thank all the great public servants of Detroit. It's our honor to be here today. I just want to make one final comment on nuclear reactors. We believe in the safe design of the GE nuclear reactors. The company has no liability, as was misstated earlier. I just want to make sure we say that for the record. Thank you, Detroit. Thank you for GE shareholders. The meeting is adjourned.